Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Your home for truth in broadcasting.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings from Copenhagen, Denmark. Tom Hartman here with you, and as if you haven't already figured that out. And it's Friday, of course, so as always with the first hour of our show on Fridays, Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent, neither a Democrat nor a Republican. His website, sanders.senate.gov. He'll be taking your calls toll-free, 866-303-2270, our telephone number toll-free all across the United States. I'm in our chat room over at tomhartman.com if you want to drop in and say hi. And, in fact, we've got a clip up at the top of tomhartman.com of my being on Danish TV last night. So, in fact, we're doing our show today from the studios of Danish Radio and Television, the national broadcasting company. So, Bernie, welcome!
Well, good to be with you, Tom, and congratulations for being in Denmark. It is a beautiful country, isn't it?
It truly is. It's extraordinary. You fly in over the windmills in the harbor. They're generating 20% of their electricity now from wind power.
Right.
Their goal is 50% within 15 years.
Incredible. You know, I'm really glad that you're there, and I'm glad that you are talking about what social democracy has done, not only in Denmark, but in Norway and Sweden and Finland and throughout much of Europe, because the corporate media in this country really does not, to any significant degree, explain to the American people what other countries are doing in terms of health care, in terms of vacation time, in terms of preschool and educational benefits. And it's important that the American people understand that one can live in a society which is not unfettered capitalism, where we continue to see the rich go much richer, while everybody else sees a decline in their standard of living. And Denmark has done some really extraordinary things. And I understand that you have talked to people about the Danish healthcare system, where everybody has healthcare as a right, and people have a hard time understanding a country which does not guarantee healthcare.
Oh, yeah. The Danes here are boggled. In fact, I did a chat today for Danish television, a live internet chat with, you know, just listeners from all over for about an hour. And they kept saying, what's the major American gestalt, you know, feeling? And I said, fear. Americans are afraid. Every American knows that they are, except for the very wealthiest among us, maybe the top 1%, and maybe even less than that, knows that they are one major illness away from bankruptcy and homelessness. And the Danes that I was talking, and this was the average man in the street, Danes that I'm talking to, they're going, no, come on, that can't be true. You're exaggerating.
Right. People cannot believe when you tell them that 47 million people in the United States have no health insurance, the cost is soaring, that bankruptcy because of inability to pay medical bills is certainly extraordinarily high. People around the world just shake their heads and they don't quite understand it. But it's not only healthcare; it is education. What's the cost of college in Denmark?
In fact, day before yesterday, we had on Kare Christensen, who is he's an MD and a PhD. He's the guy who did the epidemiological study, 80,000 people in 30 different countries. What's the happiest country in the world? You know, the study that was in the British Medical Journal. 60 Minutes did the show on it. He was live in the studio here with us. And he mentioned that he got his MD and his PhD, they paid him to go to school, and that his father had just been a laborer, just, you know, whatever. I don't mean that as a pejorative, but he said, you know, his father was a laborer, you know, like a bricklayer or something, and he decided to become a physician. And he said, because anybody who can pass the entrance exams, which are not, you know, onerous, they've got a lot of, you know, very high percentage of kids go to college, anybody who can pass the entrance exams, not only is college free all the way to MD or PhD, but they actually pay you a stipend every month to cover your costs of books and food and housing.
And it makes eminent sense because they want to have the best educated workforce possible.
Right. It's an investment in human capital.
Exactly. So I'm really glad that you're doing that, because the American people very rarely get an opportunity to get a glimpse of what goes on in other countries where all people have health care. And by the way, the quality in general is often as high or higher than in the United States, certainly a lot less expensive per capita. My guess would be that in Denmark, per person, covering all of their people, they're probably spending less than one half of what we're spending here in the United States, where they have a very strong educational system, where you do not have the kind of unequal distribution of wealth and income that we have in this country, where probably voter turnout is higher than it is in the United States. More people are engaged in the political process. And what they have reached over the years is a kind of political consensus where the idea of universal health care is not some kind of radical idea. The conservatives understand and agree with that. Free college education, conservatives understand that it is the right thing to do. And their disagreements are at the edge. Everybody has disagreements.
Yeah, the major disagreement is actually about immigration. I mean, that's that. You know, there's no debate about college, you know, free college and health care and things like that. This morning, a reporter, an American who's lived here for 20 years, he married a Danish woman, from the Copenhagen Post, interviewed me. And he went into the doctor's office. He had a problem. They discovered it was cancer. The next day, he had surgery. The next day.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like instant.
And they do things like, if you can believe this, doctors actually go to your home when you're sick.
Yeah, yeah. This is the we had dinner last night with a guy who's the president of Democrats Abroad in Denmark, and he was telling us about his experiences with the system and how, you know, one day he was so sick he couldn't get out of bed. He couldn't even make it to the bathroom. He said they just called the visiting doctor. They have these. They're called visiting doctors. It's a whole category of doctors who just make house calls.
All right, the point being that there is, you know, as I think I mentioned on the show a few months ago, we had, for the exact same reason you're in Denmark, we had the ambassador from Finland come to Vermont, to Burlington.
Yes, and we had on the show.
That's right.
At your suggestion.
And we had, you know, 350 people out just to talk about the same things. How could you live in a society where you have excellent preschool?
Right.
Highest educational standards in the world, free college education, health care for all people, virtually free, strong environmental programs. And the answer is that you have to create a political structure which responds to the needs of ordinary people in Finland. Vast majority of workers, among other things, are in unions. I suspect it's probably the same in Denmark.
It is. Yeah.
You know, where working people have a voice in government. Here, and I'm right here in Washington, D.C. today, what I can tell you is the oil companies determined for George Bush, anyhow, energy legislation. And the drug companies and the insurance companies determine health care legislation. And the banks and the credit card companies determine financial services legislation. And on it goes.
They even write it in most cases.
In some cases, they actually write the bill. That's right. And it just speaks to the need for a political revolution where ordinary people are deeply involved in the political process, where we don't get hung up on these wedge issues that the Republicans throw out at us, but we ask the questions that the important questions facing the middle class. Why aren't we joining the rest of the industrialized world, Denmark included, guaranteeing health care to all people? Why is not college education free to every person in this country? Why do we not have an economy in which the middle class is growing rather than it is shrinking? Why do we not have a tax structure which asks the wealthiest people to start paying their fair share so we lower taxes on the middle class? And on it goes. But to do those things, we need to build a strong political progressive movement prepared to take on wealthy and powerful special interests, which today dominate the political process.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, just in the context of the taxes, the taxes here, I got a note here from a local, you know, fellow. We were talking about this on the air. He said if you have a very low income in Denmark, that would be below $31,250 a year. That's considered low income in Denmark. You pay a 20.1% tax. If you have middle income, well, it's called a normal income, $78,000 U.S., you pay a 34% tax. This is below, or right in the neighborhood, of U.S. taxation.
Right.
And only if you make more than about $1 million do you pay the 62% rate. Right. And actually, he says you have to have an income over $2 million in order to pay that 62 million, that 62% rate. So it's like, you know, they don't spend half their money on their military budgets.
Well, that's another issue, by the way, that we could talk about as the show progresses. We are working very hard to try to deal with the issue of a $515 billion military budget on top of the huge amount of monies we're spending in Iraq and Afghanistan. There is a whole lot of waste and fraud in the military budget. A lot of members of the Congress don't talk about it because they're afraid of being labeled pro-terrorist or anti-American or whatever. But clearly, if we're going to get a financial house in order and start dealing with the huge unmet needs that we have in this country, whether it's healthcare, education, infrastructure, the need to move to sustainable energy, we're going to have to reshape our priorities and cutting military spending and making that the Department of Defense more efficient is one way we're going to have to do that.
Yeah, the conservatives love efficiency until it comes to the Department of Defense. Oh, my. Bernie Sanders with us. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, his website. Our number, 866-303-2270. We'll be picking up your calls for Bernie right after this break.
Tom Hartman.
Taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day, 5 days a week.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now we're getting around to Copenhagen, Denmark here. In fact, Tom Hartman here with you live. And it's our brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. By the way, just a quick heads up. In the second hour of our program today, we're going to have Ravi Batra, the professor of economics from Southern Methodist University. He's going to be on taking your calls. Ravi's a regular and a much appreciated guest, one of the most knowledgeable liberal economists in the country. And in the third hour, Mogens Lykketoft, who is a member of the Social Democratic Party and a member of parliament here in Denmark, is going to be on our show. Bernie. You want to pick up some phone calls, or was there something you wanted to add before
nope,
we went to that?
Let's do it.
Okay. 1-866-303-2270. Our number, or our telephone number, Tim in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Well, hi, guys. Nice to talk to you again. I'm wondering if somebody's being intimidated. The L.A. Times and major media had absolutely not one column inch on Kucinich's 35 impeachment points. Also, they didn't report at all on yesterday's vote. Do you feel that somebody in the media or even some senators are being physically threatened or intimidated? I can't explain it any other way.
Now, there was a lot of, I have seen a lot of discussion on the FISA vote, and I voted against cloture and was on the floor speaking about the absurdity of giving immunity to these telecommunications companies. But there was a lot of media about that. You're right. I think the impeachment effort that Dennis Kucinich brought up did not get a lot of media. And I think that that is because it's outside of what the media considers to be important. It is important. I did not. Dennis is a good friend of mine. I would not have voted for it for a number of reasons, mostly because we have to right now focus on this election and making sure that John McCain is not elected president. That would be my focus. But it deserved a lot more coverage than it got.
Yeah, and by saying you voted against cloture, what that means is that you voted to maintain a filibuster yesterday against that the FISA legislation,
right.
Or some variation on that.
No, that's exactly right.
You were one of the good guys.
Weren't all that many of us.
One of the 15, only 15. Yeah, it's amazing. I'm pleased that my Senator Ron Wyden was one of them. David in Chicago, Illinois, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator. I've heard you on the air on Time Show a number of occasions talking about income disparity and the shrinking middle class, and I can't remember what the figure is, the average income now in the United States. Can you refresh my memory on that?
I think the median is around $43,000 a year.
$43,000, okay. And how much does a United States senator make?
$165,000.
Okay, so roughly four times the median income.
Yeah.
And it seems like it would be a logical way to impact the disparity between the wealthy and the working class by limiting senators' income to what the average citizen makes in this country.
Well,
I mean, after all, the pay comes directly from the taxpayers. Yeah. Would it help?
You see, no, it would help minuscule. You're talking about a few million dollars, and you could make that case, and in the best of all worlds, that might be the case. The issue right now is you have among the top one-tenth of 1%, those are people who are making millions and millions and millions of dollars a year, are earning more income than the bottom 50%. One-tenth of 1% earning more income than the bottom 50%. Now, if you want to focus on what members of Congress make, is $165,000 a good income? You're damn right it is. It's four times what the average person makes. The CEO of a large corporation today is making about 400 times what the average person makes. So to my mind, I think when you talk about the growing gap between the very rich and everybody else, you're not just talking about members of Congress. You're talking about the CEO of Exxon Mobil a few years ago when he retired, got a retirement package of $400 million. You want to talk about that? The head of Occidental Oil a couple of years ago got a paycheck of $398 million. So I think that's really what you want to focus. People want to criticize Congress, congressional salaries, that's fine. But I think you're talking in total about a few million dollars.
Yeah, Bill McGuire from UnitedHealthcare, $1.78 billion.
Right. And I think this is, you know, a conservative diversion away from what is really the growing gap between the rich and poor. If the CEOs of major corporations earn four times what the average worker made, as is the case in Congress, would be a very different country.
Okay. Linda in Salem, Massachusetts, you're on the air listening to WHMP. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Senator, I know you're very concerned about the price of oil, given that the oil companies hold oil leases on millions of acres of our public land and they're not using it for drilling. What would prevent Congress, other than Bush's veto, in the interest of our own national security, take back that land and start our own government-controlled oil company? I know that the startup costs would be phenomenally expensive for drilling refineries and would take a long time to start, but in the long run, at least we'd have control of our own oil. And if things don't go well in the Mideast, we'd have our own oil reserves. If the oil companies want to jack up the prices, we could flood the market and bring the prices down to a reasonable level. And I would think just a threat that they, to the oil companies that they might lose their leases would bring the prices down immediately. And if the Bush vetoes the bill, at least the Democrats could say, well, it's really those Republicans that don't want you to have reasonable oil prices. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on it.
Thank you, Linda.
Well, we're working on a couple of things. I mean, I would say that, as is the case on many, many things, areas, to come up with an approach like that, so long as Bush is president and Republicans can filibuster, would be a significant waste of time. As soon as we're back from the break, let's talk about what we can do to lower oil prices and make this country energy independent. There's a lot that we can and should be doing right now.
Okay, we'll pick that up on the other end of this this break here at the bottom of the hour. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman in Copenhagen, Bernie Sanders in Washington, D.C., or Burlington, Bernie, in Vermont. And we'll be right back.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
God bless them, our brothers of the highway. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. And Bernie, you wanted to riff a little bit before we took the next call about energy.
Right. Linda suggested that perhaps on federal land, the federal government might want to do the drilling itself and make the money with a federal agency. And I think that's something worth studying. Right now, we let the private sector do it, and we probably get a lot less than we should. So that is an idea worth considering. Certainly under Bush, that's an idea that will go nowhere in a hurry. But the long-term solution is to the energy crisis is not going to be digging more oil, although you may want to do that when it's environmentally appropriate. The real direction I think we have got to go is to build a public transportation system, rebuild our railroads, have buses in public areas. I can tell you that in rural areas in Vermont right now and rural areas all over this country, it is very hard for people to get to work on bus because there are no buses. And people are totally dependent upon their cars. The cars that we're driving today in many cases get the same mileage per gallon was the case 20, 25 years ago, about 25 miles per gallon. We should be doing much, much, much better than that. There are plug-in hybrids in prototype right now on the road that get 150 miles per gallon. We should get them on the road as soon as possible. There are electric cars that have a range of 200 miles. They should be on the road as soon as possible. I'll be leaving for New Mexico in a couple of days to look at some solar thermal plants, which soon have the capability, will be built to produce as much electricity as a nuclear power plant. We should be producing dozens of those so that they can provide 20-25% of the electricity in this country. Tremendous potential in wind, where you are right now in Denmark, as you mentioned earlier, where 20% of Denmark's electricity comes from wind.
Yep.
The Bush administration, even the Bush administration, estimates that we could do about the same right here in the United States. We're also, in the midst of this emergency, working very hard to expand federal fuel assistance to low and moderate income people who are going to have a hard time staying warm next winter. It's called the LIHEAP program, and we're working hard to double that. But ultimately, the long-term answer, and this is achievable, this is not utopian thinking here, this is real, is energy efficiency. It is a movement toward sustainable energy and mass transportation.
Mm-hmm. Amen. 1-866-303-2270, our number, David in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hey, David.
Yeah, hi, Tom and Senator. Hey, let's see, I wanted to ask about the WMD issue and Scott McClellan. And before I did, do I understand right, Senator, that you used to be a prosecutor?
No.
Oh, you never have?
I plead innocent, never been a lawyer.
Oh, not even an attorney. Okay. I was wondering if you were familiar with the term constructive notice in civil law. If a landlord, for example, has a broken back stair that's a hazard and someone breaks their leg on by falling off that stair, if the landlord is not aware of it, they can be sued for damages but not for willful damages. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering with constructive notice in civil law, whether there's a countervailing or a counterpart in criminal law. So, for example, if George Bush started a war based upon false evidence and that he under ignorance went ahead with the war, but now that he's learned that it was entirely fabricated, if he still continues to act in a willful way to prosecute that war based upon that same false evidence, in law, if you tell that landlord or you tell that person, you give them notice that they are working under a misapprehension, a lie, you tell them what the problem is, and they continue to work against the truth, then they are acting willfully to propound a lie.
David, in the world that takes place here in Washington, to say I don't think that's the way it's going to work.
Well, and it's
the
not only just way, George Bush now, it's John McCain now.
Yeah. The only way this war is going to end is when we elect a new president who's prepared to bring the troops home, and you have members of Congress who are going to support this president. This war is not going to end up in a court of law. It's going to end because tens of millions of people understand this war is counterproductive. They understand that it is insane that we're spending $12 billion every month that our kids are going to be paying for. You know, we're seeing the decline of the dollar, huge ramifications. One of the reasons is our national debt is now $9.3 trillion. It's growing every day. The war in Iraq is one of the important reasons for that. This president doesn't even have the guts to ask people to pay taxes for the war. He just wants to let our kids and grandchildren pay and put it on our credit card. So that's the way the war ends. And nobody should be naive enough to believe, oh, we got a good legal case to be made here. That's not the way it's going to end. It'll end when the people demand that it ends, when we get a new president. And that certainly is going to be one of the major issues in this campaign. McCain wants to keep our troops there for God knows how long, wants to continue the war. Obama wants to bring the troops home, and people have to make their decision as to which position is closest to theirs.
Nick in San Francisco, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you for taking the call, Senator Sanders. You are a great senator, and it's great, great to have you in the Senate. One of the things I was wondering was, on the FISA legislation that's coming up, isn't there a way just to put a hold on that legislation? You've got Tom Coburn, who has put holds on all of these bills in the Senate. He's one Republican senator in the minority who's managed to stop numerous bills, and here we have to filibuster, you know, we have to get Senator filibuster the FISA legislation. Isn't there some procedural way just to stop it? I don't understand why the Republicans can do this and the Democrats can't.
Well, you're right in saying that Senator Coburn has put a hold on a whole lot of legislative pieces of legislation. We should also know is in a couple of weeks, I think late July, the Senate will probably be here for the entire weekend dealing with Coburn's holds. So, I mean, there are ways to get around that. If people want to get around it, they can get around it. You cannot stop something indefinitely. I think what you have right here is most Democrats are sympathetic to this FISA legislation. It came out of a democratically controlled intelligence committee, and we're going to do the best that we can. The bill was not voted on last night. Supposed to be, it's going to be pushed back to after the July 4th break. There will be an amendment offered by Senators Dodd, Feingold, and Leahy to do away with the immunity to the telecommunications company. That's something I certainly will support.
Okay, great. Thank you. Geralee, am I pronouncing that right? In Phoenix, Arizona, listening on KPHX.
Geralee, it's a good old Southern name.
Great. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Great.
Hi, I'm so... Senator Sanders, you are a wonderful person. You really give us out here something to feel. We actually can talk to our Senate. You know, in Arizona, we can't actually talk to our senators. I'm calling about Iran and the resolutions. I believe I've covered up my paper. While I've been waiting, I did some research and I found two articles, and there's a House Resolution 362 and a Senate Resolution 580, and it has to do with blockade of Iran and a naval blockade I'm upset. So I got word salad. But financial sanctions and really, aren't these acts of war?
Well, the answer is, I wouldn't call them quite acts of war, but they're very provocative and very aggressive. What I would say to you is many of us are concerned that after starting a war in Afghanistan and Iraq, apparently two wars is not enough for this president. And there is concern about him doing something in Iran. A number of us are doing everything that we can to stop that. I've introduced the resolution that says that the president, before he does anything, has got to come to the Congress. Other people have done similar type resolutions. I think a war against Iran would start a never-ending war between the United States and the Muslim world that would go on for decades after decades after decades. And it would be a terrible thing to do. And I happen to believe, I am one of those people who believes, and interestingly enough, especially at a time when the Bush administration, to its credit, has had some success in North Korea by negotiating.
Right.
If you can negotiate with North Korea, I think you can negotiate with anybody in the world. There's no guarantee of success. And the issue of nuclear weapons for Iran is, in fact, a very serious issue. But before you go to war, my God, there are 100 steps that can be taken, and we've got to take those steps.
Yeah. Apparently, John Bolton, we have just 20 seconds here until the break. Apparently, John Bolton and Dick Cheney are very, very upset about Iran blowing up their nuclear facility.
You mean North Korea?
North Korea, yeah, thank you, I'm sorry. They're very upset about this.
But it's a perfect example of when the Bush administration every once in a while does something right.
Yeah, no, and this was the State Department beat the vice president's office.
And the end result is, that's right, they have blown up their one part of their nuclear facility, and that's a very positive thing.
Yeah, it definitely is, and a fine thing it is. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more calls for Senator Bernie Sanders. Sanders.Senate.gov, by the way, if you want to sign up for Bernie's newsletter, check out what's going on over at his website. We're at TomHartman.com and AirAmerica.com. And our chat room is full, and I'm hanging out there here in Copenhagen. Louis and I here in Copenhagen, Denmark, doing our program live. Stick around. We'll be right back. 866-303-2270.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at
6633 2270. Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and it's our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, with us, sanders.senate.gov, his website. And Bernie, Chris in New York is on
before
the line.
Before we jump to the next question,
okay.
I did want
Hang
to
on just a second, Chris.
Before the show ended, and that is that in the midst of a lot of concern about what's going on in Washington, D.C., appropriate concern, I did want to give listeners some good news. And that is that last night the Senate passed and the House has already passed a new GI educational bill, which is the most sweeping reform of GI education benefits since the very great GI Bill of Rights at the end of World War II. And what it means is that for any person in the military or any veteran who has served after 9/11, essentially that person is going to have a college scholarship and a scholarship for graduate school and medical school or whatever. That means all tuition is going to be paid, room and board is going to be paid, there's going to be a stipend. It is the equivalent of what we gave, quite appropriately, the soldiers who fought in World War II, the great generation. And I think this is a right thing, not only for our veterans and our soldiers, it is a right thing for America because we desperately need a well-educated workforce. It is a significant step forward. And here's an example where not only did Congress do the right thing, Bush originally opposed this legislation, but because grassroots efforts all over this country said, Mr. President, you're not going to give tax breaks to billionaires while at the same time you deny veterans a decent educational opportunity. Don't do that. He heard that message, and he backed off. He's going to sign the bill. This is a good step, a good day for veterans in this country.
It is. It is. Good on you. Chris in New York, you're on with Senator Sanders.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Good.
Yes, I had a question. Back in 2001, now, I lost my job. I was outsourced to India, and I had a cash in my 401k. And I ended up owing $1,500 on it. And I couldn't pay it because I was under a lease and I had to use that money to pay my rent and bills and everything. And so far, ever since then, I haven't been able to get a tax return. I paid over $6,700 and they still tell me I owe $2,600 on a $1,500 debt. And I was wondering, in my situation, I barely make it as is with my rent and, you know, rent, gas prices, everything's going up. But anytime I get any money, they just take it from me. They took my stimulus check. They took $1,700 from me this year, and they still think I
Chris, what's
them.
Your question?
Yes.
What's your question?
Well, my question is, what could I do about that to get this taken care of? Because
all I could tell you is what I would do is, and we do this in Vermont. I don't know how it's done in New York. I would contact my local congressman and my United States senators and ask if they can intervene and explain to you what's going on and, if possible, help you.
Yeah, there you go. Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're on the air with Senator Bernie
Sanders.
Thank you,
Tom. Senator, wasn't John McCain one of the senators that voted against that GI Bill? And not only that, the oil industry right now, right? 25.
I'm sorry, did you ask me, did McCain vote against it?
Yes.
No, McCain didn't show up.
Okay, well, he voted against the president.
He hasn't voted for anything since
McCain
April 6th.
Best I understand it, McCain has been in opposition to this bill. That's correct.
Right. Okay, now the oil industry, their leases, there's only 25% of their leases in the United States that are being tapped out. The oil doesn't come into the United States from our own leases, so why should we go along and put more leases out so they can ship the oil out of this country. I think right now they should be accountable, and all the oil that comes out of the U.S. leases should, first of all, come to the American people.
Well, one of the, as I mentioned earlier, I think long-term, we're not going to drill our way out of this thing. We have to move to sustainable energy and energy efficiency. But right now, as I think the caller is indicating, the oil industry has leases on tens of millions of acres of land, both for oil and for gas, that they are not exploring. And then they say, oh, we need more offshore and environmentally sensitive areas. Doesn't make a lot of sense. There's legislation that is percolating here in the House and the Senate, which says if you don't use the leases that you now have, we're going to charge you more every single year. Use what you have before you need more.
Yeah, it seems like a good starting point. Stuart in Seattle, Washington. Stuart, you're on with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Bernie asked, why can't we have a government like Denmark's that takes care of the needs of the people and serves the interests of the people?
Well, Stuart, that is the $64 question. Well, that is the real question, and it's a long and complicated answer. But clearly it has a lot to do with the current political culture. It has a lot to do with the two-party system. It has a lot to do with the control of big money over the media, over the political parties.
Here in Denmark, politicians can't run television ads. It's against the law.
Oh, God.
What can I say?
I'm thinking about the fellow who spent millions of dollars starting a year early running against me with TV ads.
Yeah.
We could spend hours talking the whys, but the answer is that what we need is a strong grassroots movement that does not get distracted by race, by gender, by the Republican wedge issues, but brings the middle class and working people and lower income people together around a common set of progressive principles. Should everybody in America have health care through a national health care program? Yes. Do you give tax breaks to billionaires while we have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world? No. Should everybody, as is the case in Denmark, and as we just did for our recent veterans, should everybody have the opportunity to go to college and get a good education regardless of income? Yes, we should. Should we move away from fossil fuel and foreign oil to sustainable energy and energy efficiency? Yes, we should. I think there are just so many principles out there that the vast majority of people agree on. We got to focus our energies around that agenda. We have to elect progressives to the House and the Senate and to the White House, and we have to maintain a strong grassroots presence. That's the first step to bringing us to the kind of political life that exists in Scandinavia.
Yeah, it's not enough to just vote. We have to get active.
That's right.
Senator Bernie Sanders, one of the great activists of our day and one of the greatest senators in the United States Senate. Bernie, thanks again so much for being with
us. Great to be with you, Tom. Take care.
Thank you. Sanders.Senate.gov is Bernie's website. Check it out. Robbie Batra up next.
The Tom Hartman Program.
You are listening to Tom Hartman.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. You're listening to Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con in conservatives.
This is Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live in Copenhagen, Denmark. And economics, boy, is it at the top of my mind. I'm telling you, a meal that would have cost $20 for Louise and I to have here in Copenhagen, the year that George Bush was sworn into office is like $50, $60 now. And it's not because anything Denmark is doing. It's because the U.S. dollar is collapsing all around us. Paul Krugman talking in the New York Times today about how the price of iron ore is up 98%. There's not even a futures market for it, so it's not even speculation. Gold is through the roof. Oil is through the roof. Actually, maybe none of it's through the roof. Maybe it's just that the dollar is collapsing. Maybe it's this replacement of monetarism instead of tariffs, instead of a rational trade policy. Let's get some expert advice on what's going on and what we're looking at with our economic present and future. Our old friend Ravi Batra, Dr. Ravi Batra, professor of economics at Southern Methodist University in Texas and author of a number of books, Greenspan's Fraud, The New Golden Age. Do you have a new one out, Robbie?
Yeah. I'm Head. How are you?
Great. I seem to recall that you were working on a new book last time, but the last time we talked, it was just a month or so ago, so maybe you haven't finished it?
No, I'm about to start on one, but but the main thing is this new golden age is so relevant today, because whatever I wrote in that book, and I wrote it at the end of 2006, so about a year and a half, 2 years ago, whatever I wrote in that book and made forecasts, all of them, this time all of them have come true. And and they are coming true as we go along. In fact, if you recall, I happened to send an email 2 days ago talking about a major stock market decline coming soon, and I didn't know it would start right away.
Yeah, the top of drudge, the panic is the word that they're using. The market's apparently at this moment only down about 70 points, but yesterday over 200-point drop. A lot of concern in the United States and Wall Street that the fundamentals are just not there. By the way, RaviBatra.com, your website, let me be sure and get that in there for our listeners. So, Dr. Batra, what are you seeing on the horizon? What's your forecast for the American economic future?
Yesterday, the Dow Jones Index fell 358 points.
Whoa.
Today is down about, right now, about 88 points, 100 points. And but this is really nothing. The reason everything is going down now is that we have been living on the hog for so many years. So many years we have been living on foreign debt. It was domestic debt in the past, now it is foreign debt. And I don't understand why no economist has raised an alarm in the past about the foreign debt. Why is dollar falling so fast? Because our foreign debt is very high. And now the falling dollar is connected to the price of oil.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's just an excuse for them, but they can get away with it. They have been getting away with it, and so oil price is rising every day, in fact. Today, again, it's up $2 a barrel. So when oil is rising, gasoline is rising, at the same time you have tremendous amount of debt, there are layoffs occurring, this is a recipe for stock market disaster.
For a disaster, and as an economist, you don't use that word. I'm sure you use that
word
very
carefully.
No, I
don't use that word. I mean, I've been on your show for many, many, many months.
Oh, it's been several years you've been on
your show. I have not used this word yet.
Yeah.
This is the first time I'm using this word, that this is really a recipe for disaster in the next 6 months. I said 6 months because we still have, this is an election year, and the government will do everything in power to ward off the danger, to ward off the real problems, because John McCain is up for election. But after the election, there is a window of 2 or 3 months when really nobody's in charge. In November, December, and January, nobody is in charge. At that time, I think we face the biggest danger of a stock market crash.
Of a major crash, a Great Depression era style crash, you're talking.
That's right. I'm not talking about a Great Depression itself, but at least a stock market, big stock market fall, 20 to 25% type.
So, over the last 30 years now, since Ronald Reagan came into office, they have been steadily recalculating how we figure out consumer price index and you know the escalators for Social Security. They figured out all these slick, sneaky little ways to make sure that people on fixed incomes and Social Security don't actually get more, and so the net effect is they've been getting less and less and less. And at the same time, they've been saying, oh, you should just, you know, privatize your savings, 401ks and IRAs and SEPs and all this kind of stuff. So the consequence of this is that we've got a lot of Americans now who have a good chunk of their money tied up in, and I mean literally tied up. If they try and take it out, there's huge tax consequences and penalties as well, not to mention brokerage fees and whatnot, tied up in these retirement accounts that are in many, probably most cases, invested in the stock market. What should people do?
This is a very, very tough question. It's a heartbreaking question, too, because so many people's retirement is tied into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the suggestion saying that Social Security should be tied to the stock market is simply ridiculous.
Right.
You don't take risks with your retirement money. What should people do? Well, I would say... at the very least, if they have some control over their 401ks, they should write some. They should hedge by writing some deep in the money, long term options.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, suppose you have IBM stock. A lot of people do, and the stock is selling for about $100 a share right now. You could write a call on it, say, strike price could be, say, $85 or $80, and you'll get a premium of about $22. So you have hedged yourself against the fall of about $22. Again,
right. Although that hedge, if it,
$22 fall.
Right, although if it doesn't drop, then you've lost all the money that you spent on that call. I mean,
no.
Calls evaporate, don't they?
No, if it doesn't drop... then your stock price goes up faster than the call price.
Oh, I see.
So you're
basically just hedging your bets. You're hedging your positions.
You're hedging your bet. Your profit will be smaller. If there is a profit, it will be smaller, and the loss will be much smaller. There may not be a loss at all.
Why not just move your money out of the stock market and put it in CDs? Or is that something you can't do in a 401k?
No, you can do. I don't think 401ks allow that. But for that, you perhaps have to move the plan to a bank.
Mm-hmm.
You have to transfer the plan to a bank, and then they would allow that. I don't know if you can do that.
Yeah. What are the fundamentals here? You said you were talking about our foreign debt is so great, and this is the thing that's driving this. It seems to me that we don't make stuff in America anymore. The value of our dollar, I believe, is a function of what our country is worth, our natural resources plus our productivity. And because we don't make stuff here anymore, it seems that, you know, the rest of the world is saying, okay, we don't think that your dollar is worth that much. You know, that America's not, doesn't have that much value. Companies are coming in and buying our country, countries are coming in and buying our companies at fire sale prices. By the foreign debt, are you referring to the $9+ trillion that principally Reagan, Bush, and Bush have borrowed by spending more than they were bringing in taxes because of their silly tax cuts? Or are you referring to the $700-800 billion a year balance of trade deficit where we're borrowing money from the world in order to buy stuff from the world, or both?
Well, there are two types of debts. $9 to $10 trillion is the government's total debt, federal government's debt. Let's not count the state government's debt in this. The federal debt is, I think, around $10 trillion, and out of that, $2 trillion is owed to Social Security Fund. That's a fraud by itself. They should not be touching that money, but they have borrowed it. Borrowed $2 trillion from the Social Security Fund.
Yeah.
Another $5 trillion from the local people and $3 trillion from abroad.
Yeah. Let's pick up finish the conversation on this on the other side of the break. And if you have questions for Dr. Ravi Batra, you can stick around, right?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Great. If you have questions for Dr. Ravi Batra, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. 16 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
Thank you. she was the daughter of something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Friday from Copenhagen, Denmark. Dr. Robbie Batra is with us. One of my favorite authors. He's written the author of numerous books. You can find out all about them over at ravibatra.com, R-A-V-I-B-A-T-R-A.com. And I'm particularly fond of The New Golden Age and of Greenspan's Fraud. But he's also written a number of others. And Robbie, shall we take some phone calls here? I got a bunch of people who want to ask you questions. Okay, great. Let's get right to it here. Sean in Vancouver, Washington. You're on the air with Dr. Robbie Batra.
Hello, Dr. Batra. I'm currently reading two books. One is The New Paradigm for Financial Markets by George Soros, and the other is Other People's Money by Naomi Prinz. The point, basically, of my call is that George Soros is predicting what he's calling a super bubble, and Naomi Prinz, in her book, she's basically saying that there really hasn't been a capitulation. The regulatory climate in the United States has been, you know, basically complete free market reign for these corporations, you know, long-term capital management and so on and so forth, Enron. And we really haven't had a reintroduction of good regulatory policy. Do you think Hank Paulson's proposals are really going to go through, or can we really get something much, much tougher than that even?
Oh, we need much tougher than that. First of all, we don't have a free market. There's monopoly capitalism today. And
what does that mean?
That means that the markets, the players are so big, so large, that they can manipulate prices. If you recall this dot-com boom until 1999, see, stock market was rising like crazy, even for companies that had not even shown a dime in profit.
Right.
That we are now in the same kind of bubble. The bubble, except the bubble is now in oil. Now, the dot-com boom crashed right before our eyes. This oil bubble will also crash, but the crash will be horrendous. The dot-bubble crash affected only the stock market. The oil crash can occur only if the economy crashes. That's really bad, and that's why we need a tremendous. We need not just regulation. We need the breakup of all these merged industries, especially the oil industry, to control the situation at hand.
We need to enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Exactly.
I believe that Teddy Roosevelt broke Rockefeller's company into 26 or 27 different entities.
Yes, sir. That's right. Exxon and Mobil were then separate entities. They were carved out of one Standard Oil, and they put, I think, 34 different companies. Just imagine, 34 different companies at that time. And now we have only five major companies. They are the ones manipulating the market, and then they are investing heavily into hedge funds also. So these hedge funds then cause speculation. Speculation is being blamed, but behind all these speculators are the oil companies.
Yeah, okay. Nancy in Royal Oak, Michigan, listening to WDTW. You're on the air with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Hello?
Nancy?
Yes.
Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hi. Mike, I read your book. I loved it, Greenspan's Fraud, and as much as I could understand it, I really tried to. My question is, with interest rates as low as they are, shouldn't, and I guess this is like to me, economy 101, shouldn't interest rates be higher than what inflation is? And isn't that what makes it so like nobody wants to invest in America?
Well, interest rates are very low because they have no other choice. They want people to borrow money. There is not enough demand in the economy because wages are so low relative to productivity. See, the people's earnings, salaries have not been rising at all while they are more and more productive. Now, this productivity, rising productivity, raises supply because when you are more productive, you'll produce more. But this supply, this production has to be bought by somebody. And if your wages are not rising, you can't buy this all this production. So they want to create demand through borrowing. That's why they have brought interest rates down sharply. But with people's home equities already mortgaged and people's credit already gone, the banks are not willing to lend them any more money. So that's a real crisis. Supply is way, production is way ahead of demand, and that's why they have interest rates so low to create artificial demand. And that's another big problem with the system. And that's why this system cannot make a comeback. In the past, they could revive the economy by creating by making bringing interest rates down sharply. This time it's not helping. First, because people don't have collateral. Secondly, when you bring interest rates down, the elderly suffer a lot. Their incomes go down sharply. So this time it's not going to work. And that's why I feel that we have a disaster coming up soon.
Yeah. To recap it in kind of average English, I think, here, if I may. Before Reagan, we had demand-side economics. People got paid well, and they used that money to buy things. They're buying things, wanting things, cause companies to say, hey, there's a demand, let's make stuff, and the economy worked. As Reagan went to supply side, they started shifting all this money to the wealthy, cut wages, cut unions, and people couldn't afford to buy things anymore. They had to figure out a way to get people to buy things, so they said, borrow against your house, we'll make it really easy.
Exactly.
Get a credit card, we'll make it really easy.
Right.
And now everybody is tapped out. They've borrowed everything they can possibly borrow, and so this solution to make things look good, when in fact they're terrible because Reaganism has raped our economy for 30 years, the solution of encouraging people to borrow more is no longer functional because people, they're tapped out. That's the bottom line, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Dr. Ravi Batra with us. He'll be taking your calls, 866-303-2270, right after this. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
We're going to keep fighting for this country, well, for that country over there. I'm here in Denmark. We're going to keep fighting for America until, you know, I love George Bernard Shaw's two of his sayings. One, if you love your work, you never work a day in your life. And number two, I want to be all used up when I die. And there you go. Dr. Ravi Batra is with us. RaviBatra.com is website. His books, among others, The New Golden Age and Greenspan's Fraud. And Dr. Batra, let's take some more calls, okay?
Sure.
Richard in Deerfield Beach, Florida, listening on WINS. You're on the air.
Tom, come back to America, Tom.
Yeah, I'm coming back tomorrow, Richard. Don't worry.
anyhow, I'm trying to get a sense of humor here because my question to Dr. Batra has to do with, I believe the global financial system is broken. And the reasoning behind that is we have rather a two-tiered system, one that we all know about, whether we're regulations and taxation structures. But there's the other one that I believe is floating above it. It's the derivatives market that seems to be so out of control and so vast that no one really knows how to tackle it. And they're only putting fingers in the dike. And I believe, from my perspective, that all the monies that all the central banks have been having at their auctions and at their bond sales and the different money that they floated over the last several months, which probably is $5 or $10 trillion globally, that it's just to kind of be a stopgap so no one really pays attention that we're really into a phase where the amount is up to maybe and even surpassing a quadrillion. And I was wondering if Dr. Batra saw that and how he, given the Basel II agreement, how he thought maybe all of that paper is going to come back to be on the book.
Interesting. Let's start out. Thank you, Richard. Let's start out by explaining what a derivative is.
Well, a derivative is something that it's a security that's connected to the underlying security. Like if you buy if you have a stock, then the stock is connected to an option is connected to a stock. An option is about 20 to 30% of the stock price, and that's the derivative. So people, instead of buying stocks, can buy options also.
Right. It's also, isn't derivatives included among that, under that rubric are these aggregated mortgages that have been sold, are they not? Are those not derivatives?
No, those are the CDOs. Those are actually fraudulent. More. Some of the mortgages were really fraudulent. What they did, it's like as an analogy. Suppose you are a beef seller, you mix good beef with bad beef, and then sell the whole product as high quality beef. Right. A lot of it is rotten.
Right. And
that's what these some of the mortgage people did.
No, I understand. But in the process of selling that, aren't they saying that they're selling a collection of different types of debt instruments, different types of mortgages, you know, some residential, some commercial, some
high. If there are options related to those mortgages, then those would be derivatives.
I see. Okay. All right. So to Richard's question, there's this huge market out there of these financial instruments that people don't understand.
$200 trillion.
$200 trillion.
Yeah. If this time the collapse comes, it will kill the system. This
worldwide.
My pardon?
It'll kill the system worldwide.
Worldwide. And that's why, remember, the title of my book is The New Golden Age. But the golden age comes after the collapse of the system. And in fact, I wrote the book at the end of 2006. That's when I finished it. And in that, I predicted that a man like Barack Obama would rise. He would bring sanity to the nation. He would start a revolution against the lobbyists, the corporate cooks, and end the rule of money in society. That's the revolution I'm predicting. But before the revolution comes, there is going to be a tremendous amount of economic chaos. So the full title of the book is this: The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. And I wrote this at the end of 2006. Everything that I've written in that book has so far come true, is coming true, and there are forecasts up to about 2015. So I'm on your show, this is the first time I'm using the word disaster. I see a disaster in the making. Why? Oil price is rising. House prices are falling. Unemployment is rising. We have huge amount of foreign debt. Dollar is collapsing. You name it. There is no silver lining or light from any source, from any side of the world economy.
Right, and so much of this goes back to the economic policies advanced by Alan Greenspan
and
Ronald Reagan.
It all started with Reagan, yes.
It all started with Reagan and Greenspan. It's incredible the damage those guys did to this country.
Yeah,
Tony in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you're on the air with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Hi, Doctor, and hi, Tom. Doctor, right now, the farmers in the Midwest are getting a subsidy for the ethanol. And you have Texas lawmakers in the Senate, even the Texas governor, who is lobbying to get those subsidies removed. Now, this crisis that you're speaking of is headed our way. And these subsidies to our farmers for ethanol, isn't that a way to mitigate the crisis, and shouldn't we encourage that, whereby at least we give our farmers incentives to produce, create jobs within, like, the Midwest, and at least keep the farm prices up?
Well, see,
thank you, Tom.
There is a good way of doing things and a bad way of doing things. Now, it's true that you are giving subsidy to ethanol producers, and that slightly keeps the price of oil down. But then on the other side, it raises consumer prices all over the world. It creates food shortages. Corn supplies for consumption is down. And so there are good ways to do things. There are bad ways to do things. Bush administration or Reagan administration, they always look at the interests of the producers. They never look at the consumers and wage earners, and that's the whole problem. We have to balance the situation. Prices have to be reasonable, and wages also have to be reasonable. When you have balance in the economy, that's when the economy flourishes. When you have imbalances, for a few years, some people will become very rich, and then there will be collapse. That's where we are on the verge of a collapse right now.
On the verge of that collapse.